की जय। नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। फ्रेंड्स को हो Just do the next verse. From, what was the one? Okay. So now we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, of Rishabha Dev's teachings. This morning, text number 8. We don't have it on the board because the board is locked up in the library. But this is a famous verse. You'll know this verse. Pumsa striya mituni bhavam etam tayor mituridaya grantim ahu ato griha kshetra sutat vitaya janasya mohoyam aham mameti. So say after me, Pumsaha of a male. Sriyaha of a female. Mituni bhavam, attraction for sexual life. Etam, this. Yes. Tayo, of both of them. Mittaha, between one another. Ridaya, grantim, the knot of the hearts. Ahuhu, they call. Ataha, thereafter. Griha, by home. Kshetra, field. Sutta, children. Apta, relatives. Vitaihi, and by wealth. Janasya, of the living being. Moha, illusion. Ayam, this. Aham, I. Mama, mine. Iti, thus. Translation. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Sex serves as the natural attraction between man and woman. And when they are married, their relationship becomes more involved. Due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion, whereby one thinks, this man is my husband, or this woman is my wife. This is called Hridaya Granthi, the heart knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult. Shishi Radha comes to Bihari. This knot is very difficult to undo. even though a man and a woman separate, either for the principles of varnashram or simply to get a divorce. In any case, the man always thinks of the woman, and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus, a person becomes materially attached to family, property, and children. Although all of these are temporary, the possessor, unfortunately, identifies with his property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Samhita, it is stated, Brahmadya Yajnavalkadya Muchante Sri Sahayinaha Bodhyante Kechanayatesham Vishvesham Cha Vido Viduhu. Sometimes it is found among exalted personalities like Lord Brahma that the wife and the children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life and liberation. Nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of the marital relationship, and consequently, they forget their relationship with Krishna. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Samadhi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Ramane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivisesa Sunyavani Paschacha Desatarane Om Gyanam Timaram Dasya Gamamizana Shilakaya Chaksuru Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshvalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhepa Chapatitanam Padane Bhyo Vaishnava Om Namaha. Pumsa Striya Mittuni Bhavan Etam. This Mittuni Bhava, this feeling for mating, coupling, coming together for sexual intercourse, is called bhava, this absorption or attraction for this mitni, pumsaha striyaha, between a man and a woman. And that's what it's talking about. Ahu, they, meaning the authorities, called mutual mito, mitaha means between each other, kridaya grantin. The knot of the hearts. It's like we've seen people wearing, usually women, yeah, women always, but little rings or pendants around the neck, and they show their two hearts interlocking. You see that? The interlocking hearts. So the hearts are a heart, they actually depict the hearts knotted together like this. So this is exalted in our culture. So because of this Hridaya Granthi Mitahu, this mutual knotting together of the hearts, therefore, Ataha means consequently, there is this illusion. Of the living being involving Griha, the home, Kshetra, the field, your front and backyard, or your estate, or your property, your home, your property, Suta, your beloved offspring, your little boys and girls, Apa, your relatives, Vitaha, your wealth, these things. A woman becomes attached to all these things. It is called moha. It's an illusion by which one thinks like this. The illusion is called aham mameti, I and mine. Sometimes this is called mamaham iti, the conditioned living being. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, mamaham iti manyate. Oh, the Bhagavatam, right? Bhagavad Gita, mamaham, he thinks like this mentality of I and mine. Here meaning, I am the body, and everything in relationship to the body belongs to me. My wife, my children, my house, my property, my friends, my relatives, my wealth, my reputation, and so on and so on. So here he's describing the causes for attachment. In other places in the Bhagavatam, this Hridaya Granthi, here is described as a mutual between one another, but other places in the Bhagavatam, we'll discuss tomorrow, Hridaya Granthi is described as Karmashaya, the strong, deep urge to enjoy fruit of activity in the world. That's the Hridaya Granthi. Hridaya Granthi means, as the knot in the heart, it's what joins the spirit soul to the material body. It's that knot. And therefore, it's another name for the false ego. But usually, it begins with sexual attraction. When the sex desire begins to become strong, and this attraction between a man and a woman arises, then one becomes impelled almost to enjoy. And at least if you follow spiritual principles for regulated sense gratification, you get married. That's now out of fashion, of course. So it's even worse. Somebody says, oh, I'm not attached to my wife. I got so many. She's number five in the list. You know? And people are trading. And oh, children, yeah, there are children all over the place. I don't even know their names. this is even more degraded. But here, Bhagavatam is assuming, and Prabhupada actually assumes in his purport, that we're talking about at least regulated sense gratification. Now, everywhere all over America and the world, preachers everywhere are preaching regulated sense gratification. If a person is actually, if a couple, you know, you see them, they're 70 years old and they've been married for 50 years, and everybody just, you know, what an exemplar of piety that they've actually been married to each other for 50 years. No divorce, no separation. And they've stayed in their same house their whole life. And they're surrounded by their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And the priest comes and gives a special blessing that everybody should be like them. Isn't this wonderful? Right? It's everywhere. And then people preach like this, you know, just to keep people. And yet, it's all based on sense gratification. So this sounds, Rishabhade sounds a little particularly harsh. Huh? And you get the idea of this being anti-family, because it's the attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. But actually there's a stronger illusion that you can't even maintain family relationships anymore. The families have broken apart. You know? Because this is the erosion of the Vedic way of life by modernity. Because it used to be the family was extended. What in India they call the joint family. Sociologists in America call the extended family. Where it wouldn't be just a man and a woman and their children living together, but it would be grandparents of a man, the man and four brothers, their wives and all their children, and that's the what they call the extended family. And this was also the way things were done in Europe, but you know, in the 17th century this began, or rather the 18th century really, it began breaking down already. And then you had what was called the nuclear family, where just a husband and a wife and children, isolated from everybody else, no relatives around, even the mother and father somewhere else. And now, of course, that's broken down. It's a subatomic family. Where now they're what they call single-parent families. Children and usually the mother, but sometimes just the man. Or this other thing where there's a man and a woman married, but they're children from his previous marriage and children from her previous marriage, and maybe some of their own from this marriage, or maybe not, you know. And maybe children from several previous marriages on either side. It gets really complicated. So here, we think that attachment to a family, in the sense that a man and a woman get together and stay together their whole life, is really pious. And it's true. It is pious. But this piety, based on material sense gratification, is also the enemy of transcendence, of liberation. Piety leads to the heavenly planets at best. One stays attached in the material world. This is the attraction between male and female. It's a natural. People think if it's natural, it's all right. Whatever is natural is okay. There's a great deal of effort that people want to show that, say, the sexual attraction between people of the same sex is also natural. They cite the behavior of monkeys and so on, hyenas or whatever, these things go. But whatever natural may be, but there's another nature, as Prabhupada says. This is the material nature. It's not the only nature. So what's natural in the material nature is unnatural in the spiritual world. And what's natural in the spiritual world certainly looks unnatural to material people. So when we say no illicit sex, and even our ideal of marriage is where sex is limited as much as possible, so that actually there can be a marriage which is transcendental, that is, say, favorable for spiritual progress, people think that's really unnatural too. But it's natural. But natural according to the standards of the internal or spiritual potency. And what's natural according to the material energy is very unnatural, spiritual energy. So this is what happens. Is what happens with any sense gratification, we were discussing this earlier, is that it forces us to identify ourselves with the material body. That's the problem. Therefore, aham, I am this body. We become attached to the body. We have this conception that this is me. This is called the false ego, the wrong idea about myself. This is moha, the word is used in this verse. This illusion. We are mistaking one thing for something else. We have imposed the idea of the self upon the material body and the mind, which are actually the not-self. We think the self ends here, the not-self is this out beyond the boundary of the skin. But actually, the boundary between the self and the not-self happens in another place. Because the body is the not-self, and the mind is the not-self. There are material nature and there are our environment, the field. And the knower of the field is the self, the consciousness. So people do not understand this, and they have no realized knowledge of it. And this identification of the self with the material body is ultimately the source of suffering. Because we experience whatever happens to the body as happening to us. Because we try to enjoy in this world, and in sense gratification, we identify with the body. And then that, as that, the deeper the identification with the body is, the more we suffer. Because whatever happens to the body, we think is happening to us. Now, the body has some capacity for pleasure, so there are a few brief thrills. But the whole picture of the body is it grows old, it becomes diseased, and it dies. And therefore, we are in that cycle. We are attached to the body. And you know, when you're young, it's fun, feels good, does things. You fall on the floor, you pretty much bounce up again. But then, as it starts to get older, your senses, which formerly were the source of pleasure, themselves become a source of pain. The body itself hurts all the time. And things start not working. And of course, in the material society, they're now dedicated to keeping the body going forever. So medical science is coming up with replacement parts as much as possible. Artificial hips, artificial knees, artificial this, artificial that. Heart transplants, lung transplants, liver transplants, and they have plans, which is characteristic of a demonic society, to try to make this body immortal. I mean, there's serious cutting-edge work being done in genetically engineering animals like pigs, so that they will have body parts that can be transplanted into human beings without any immune reaction. So that if you thought it was weird already that they're growing animals for food, pretty soon they'll be growing animals for body parts, genetically engineered animals. And of course, and right now there's already a best-selling novel about what looks like a school for children, and they're being grown for body parts. And I'm sure this is going on in different places in the world. And they're talking about people doing making clones. And so there's another person who's identical, genetically identical to oneself, that can be harvested for body parts and so on. These things are going on. People do anything to keep the body going, they're so attached. But it will always be a disaster. You can do all these things, but they're gruesome procedures, and they never work as well as they should. Anyway, they're trying to keep going in this way, to keep the body going, but it will grow old. It will become diseased. So many of these things are simply going to produce new diseases. There's this term, iatrogenetic diseases. Iatros is the Greek word for physician. They mean diseases caused by medical treatment. There are some estimates already that maybe 40% of all the diseases in America are caused by doctors. You count the number of people who die from drug reactions, you know, medical malpractice, and hospital staphylococcus infections, and so on. It gets to be quite a number. Anyway, so disease is going to be there. The new one keeps popping up all over the place. You know, people are terrified about bird flu and so on. And then, of course, the death problem can't be solved. Even Hiranyakashipu wanted to solve the death problem. So all these things, birth, old age, disease, and death, these are the real problems. And because of that, the prospects for anyone who identifies themselves with the material bodies are very bad. Very, very bad. The more you identify yourself with the body, the worse it is. There are people who don't have spiritual knowledge, but somehow or other, maybe because of some natural dose of the modes of goodness, are not so attached. Or people who really identify, who are really absorbed in science and poetry and things like that. And you know, they're a little more equipoised. But ultimately, I tell you, their minds go too. Like the great philosopher Immanuel Kant, when he got old, he lost the ability to even understand his own writings. This is what happens. So it's just bad news all around. The identification of the self with the material body, and people cannot, because they're so in the body. And so identified with it, they cannot imagine anything else. Because the passion and ignorance are so strong. But if there becomes, somehow or other, a mode of goodness is there, then it becomes possible to understand spiritual philosophy. So that's what Krishna consciousness introduces people. Not only the idea that you are not the body, but also the practices by which one can experience oneself as a spiritual being. And so the practices of Krishna consciousness decrease initially, they decrease the modes of passion and ignorance, and therefore one can begin to understand these things, that I am not this body. And one becomes elevated from passion to goodness. And then spiritual philosophy becomes clearer and clearer, and one can also begin to hear the directions of super soul. Otherwise there's too much static from the modes and distortion, and you can't hear. So there's a solution to this problem. But this means that one has to become detached from sense gratification. You have to look at the material world ultimately with a cold eye. You just simply have to see it for what it is. You have to know these things. Naturally, Prabhupada described that spouse or children are natural objects of affection, and it is not intended that one should have no feeling for these things. But recently, my youngest son, who's not a kid anymore, he's 28 years old, but he ended up in the hospital with emergency lung surgery for 6 hours. I was in India, my wife was by herself at home. You know, and I realized how attached I am to my son. You know, he had this raw life-threatening condition and this emergency surgery. I mean, he's okay now, but he does have a long-term, has had a long-term lung problem. But I just realized, you know, how attached I was to my son. And I was in Mayapur, and so I was praying to the Sringadeva, you know, please just take care of him, whatever happens. You take, because really the initial prognosis of the doctors was they were thinking, oh, maybe we're going to have to look at a lung transplant and, you know, all these kind of really heavy stuff, and maybe he has some variation of cystic fibrosis, you know, which means not a very long lifetime and stuff like that. But it's not that serious. But and so and then I, you know, I had to think, you know, I know very well, although I'm attached to this person, I understand that he doesn't really belong to me, you know, we have our children, we want them to do well. As parents, we have this very deep instinct, you might call it, to nurture our children and to protect them, and when we fail at that, you know, it is devastating that we cannot protect our children. But then I have to think, well, does that mean I have to control material nature? Am I the controller of material nature? You know, I mean, obviously to protect our children, I just have to depend upon the mercy of Krishna ultimately, because what can anyone do? You know, I mean, my son was at the University of Pennsylvania medical facility, you know, top-notch, first-class doctors, you know, credentials a mile long and everything like that. But still, anything can happen. And I had to think, well, you know, when I came into this world, or he came into this world, was I given some gold-plated guarantee that nothing bad will happen? So this way I had to remind myself, you know, what is the reality of our situation, and that eventually all of us are going to die. Everyone is going to grow old sooner or later. So we just have to understand the way this world is, and although we have some natural affection for our children, we have to understand that they don't belong to me. They belong to Krishna, and Krishna decides whatever happens. And we have to say that whatever Krishna decides is always the best in the circumstances. To surrender to that, we have to come to that point of detachment. So there's a strong a tendency to be attached in this world. Prabhupada mentions here, even a person gives up these things for renunciation, you find still the tendency for attachment is so strong. As he said, a sannyasi becomes attached to a temple. I remember, like in the early days of this movement, we were really austere. And there was a big room, which was the men's ashram. And we just put sleeping bags down on the floor and slept there. There was not even a mat underneath it. And that's how austere everybody was. But some people that was their corner. And if somebody else happened to put their sleeping bag down there, you know, it was like a lot of oops. So you see this happens, you know, some people get attached to some little tiny thing, you know, their tilak container or some, you know, some little thing. It's true, because it's just the idea, just this wanting to own things. You get some false sense of security from this. You know, just like little children, they have this security blanket sometimes. Some of my children did that. You know, this famous Linus in the Peanuts cartoon series. You know, this little old blanket that they carry around. Often they have their thumb in the mouth, and they have this little blanket that they rub all the time. It's a security blanket. You know, and the thing gets filthy, and then to get it away from them long enough to wash it, it's like a kid sitting outside the dryer. That blanket is not going to protect them from anything. It's just something in the mind. You have to have something. Your security. And so the whole material world, we've got our security blankets, you know, that are all worthless. I mean, the real security blanket has to be Krishna. That's the one, that should be our point of contact. When we always remember Krishna, you will always feel safe and protected, no matter what happens. As it said, not disturbed even in the midst of greatest difficulty. Because the relationship with Krishna is eternal. That never goes away. Everything we have for substituting for Krishna. Because when Krishna is forgotten, we need substitutes. Because we are naturally attached to Krishna. When Krishna is gone, we've got this Krishna-sized hole that we need to fill. But we don't know Krishna is there, so we're trying to put other things in to substitute. So accept no substitutes. The husband is not a substitute. The wife is not a substitute. The temple is not a substitute if it's done in a certain way. Huh? The country is not a substitute. None of these things are. Wealth is not a substitute. Reputation is not a substitute. So one has to be very careful about this attachment and understand the difference between what is temporary and what is eternal. And see the material world for what it is. If we have material attachments, always we have to make up some fantasy. It's hard for us to see without illusion, because you see without illusions. It's very hard. I have to think that Krishna cares about every living being in this world. Because I come out this morning, I walk outside, and it's a nice day. Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Marjaloka. All around me in this very city, people right now are leaving their bodies. They're in the throes of death. Their parents are grieving. Grandparents are grieving. If you just could just feel for one second the accumulated misery of people in this city right now, it's unbearable. And we say, it's a nice day. It's a nice day. Sometimes in extreme situations like warfare, you know, when soldiers are in combat, then you see. And the reason they never forget it is because they realize this is the real world. And they never trust peace. They think that whenever there's peace, it's just a thin layer, and that any minute the real world can come out again. And they're right. You know, they're suffering what they call post-traumatic stress disorder. But it's not. It's the only rational reaction to what they've learned. That you can't trust material existence. But if you learn this about material existence and you don't have any spiritual shelter, then the only reasonable thing to do is go crazy. And so therefore the people that are sane are really insane, because they've got some illusion to hide what's really happening. That's the moha. And the French philosopher Pascal pointed this out in one of his aphorisms. He said, human beings are so naturally mad, meaning insane, human beings are so naturally mad that not to be mad is another form of madness. So people have their necessary illusions just to keep them functioning through the day. And if they don't have it, then they go crazy. And so the only way we can really see it as for what it is if we're Krishna conscious. And then you'll see. And then we'll all see what this world is like. But at the same time, we understand that ultimately Krishna is in control and he's caring for everybody. We will also be able to accept it. This is very hard for people, because when they see how tough the material world is, a lot of times they get angry at God. It's just like Arjuna when he saw the universal form and that aspect of it called the Kala Rupa. It was hard to take. It was really, really tough to see that. He didn't want to see it. But ultimately he understood that behind this universal form of death, you take the mask away and there's Krishna. And we have to understand this too, that Krishna has this aspect. But it's actually a very tiny and not very important aspect when you're Krishna conscious. And we also understand that the world is this way, not because Krishna actually wants it, but because of the living entities have abused their freedom and have created this hell for each other. The only sane thing to really do is to put our effort into becoming free from material attachment. The biggest doubt, even if we understand all this, we think it cannot be done. We think I can't do it, or we think, well, maybe a few exceptional people can do it, like Srila Prabhupada. But then we look around, look at so many devotees, they've been practicing so long, and still we see their material attachments. But Prabhupada never told us, he never said to anybody, you're ineligible. Because he may say also, well, look at me, you know, I'm born in the, you know, in the belly of the beast of Kali Yuga, in the worst places, I didn't have a pious upgrade for bringing. We're so exposed to so many things to increase material attachment, how is it possible? Prabhupada never just said anyone is ineligible. And Prabhupada gave us perfectly clear directions what to do. And if we just actually follow those directions, things will work out very nicely. It's a very, very powerful process for us. And simply, a lot of times we just have to make up our minds to do it. And part of the thing of making up our minds to do it is to understand the real consequences of the material world and the real consequences of material attachment. And that everything we're attached to and seeking to preserve, we don't control material nature. And we cannot control material nature. And everything we have, sooner or later, is going to dissolve. We don't know what the time frame is, but it will happen, and we should prepare for it. That's why we are instructed. We should live every day as if it's our last one, because it may well be. Prabhupada famously remarked, you know, you think, oh, I'll wait until I'm old. His Prabhupada said, the definition of old age is just before you die. So can anyone say I'm not old? We, all these things we should not forget what we can accomplish in this world if we're Krishna conscious, and what a loss it is if we don't take this opportunity to solve the real problems of life. Okay, questions, comments? Yes. Yeah, it's directed toward Krishna. There's even a sense of possession, of possessiveness. This is Krishna is mine. But there's no envy of others, there's a sense of ownership. What happened in the material world? You see, I think every soul in the material world is suffering from a post-traumatic trauma. We are suffering a trauma from a trauma, a post-traumatic condition, and the trauma that we suffer from in our past is the trauma of coming into material existence. There's one psychologist, a psychiatrist, Otto Rank, who thought that the birth trauma was at the basis of everything. But it goes back further than that. It's the trauma of coming to the material world. And we're all suffering from the shock of it. And that trauma of coming to the material world is the loss of sat, the loss of chit, and the loss of ananda. Because we're spiritual beings, we expect sat, chit, and ananda. But in the material world, asat, achit, nirananda. So the loss of sat means just to be, just securely to be, just to exist without the possibility or the chance of not existing. That's sat. We want that sat, but now here we're in the atmosphere of non-existence. Everything looks like it can be taken away from us. So one way we respond to this trauma is, this is mine. Let me hold on to it. Let me grasp it. This is my body. This is myself. This is my wife. Now, see, I'm secure. I have security. I'm sitting on this mansion with security cameras all around, and sensors and security guards and armor-plated vehicles to travel in. You know how they do everybody with security. I mean, this country is obsessed with security. Where, I mean, this is unloaded with security devices, and still, you know, then they get in. And everybody's so freaked out. We can't protect ourselves, you know. It's the loss of sat, and you become obsessed with security. The loss of chit. You know, I don't know anything. I can't find my way in this world. I don't know what's going to happen next. Everything is threatening because I just don't know what's going to happen. And then people start, let's figure it all out. Let's figure it all out. Let's figure it all out. And then they find out they can't. That at the root of all their knowledge is, you know, assumptions and presuppositions, and they find they're wrong all the time, and then they really freak out, you know, they go through and promulgate false certainties and make false claims and lie and cheat to themselves and others that we really know something, you know? And then there's the loss of ananda, where we find these substitute pleasures that actually cause more suffering. Anyway, so this is the trauma. So that's where these obsessions with various things, trying to enjoy in the world, trying to gain knowledge, trying to be secure. They're all trying to make up for this loss that we of this trauma of coming into the material world. So our point is to come back. We come to the ultimate reason for this trauma, and the ultimate reason is I have turned away from Krishna. I had a relationship with Krishna and spiritual existence, but I turned away. It's a broken relationship. Now, in the material world, we know husband and wife, they have a broken relationship. You go to a counselor, they say, well, you know, there's fault on both sides. In this case, the fault's all on my side. Krishna didn't do anything wrong, and it was just my own perversity. And I have to come to terms with what I did, and I have to really regret it, and I have to beg Krishna, really beg him, to forgive me and accept me back. Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patitam vam vishameva vambudo kripaya tava para pankajasti tudulisit sadvisam vitintaya. We have to pray like that and really mean it. Because that's what has happened. We have turned away from Krishna, and therefore our real identity as a servant of Krishna, our real ego, is now lost to us, and we've got this material body, which is and mind, which is made for forgetting Krishna. It's all formed in perversity. But by Krishna's grace, although we turned away from Krishna, he did not turn away from us. And so we see we have this all facility for coming back. And Krishna comes to the world so many times. He sends his devotees. Here I look at what Prabhupada went through. And why did he go through all these troubles and difficulties? Well, because Krishna didn't turn back, to turn away from us. He sent Prabhupada, and Prabhupada did so many things just to bring us back to Krishna. So we should be grateful. And now we have this Krishna consciousness, let's don't lose it. Let's take advantage of this opportunity. Okay? Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.